Welcome to the Frontier Psychiatrist Podcast. I'm your host, Owen Scott Muir, MD.
Nothing particularly significant or important. It wasn't terribly dramatic.
That boy needs therapy. That boy needs therapy.
Lie down on the couch. That's crazy when we've got effective interventions at our disposal. What does that mean? Large effect sizes, empirical questions answered left and right.
A lot of the psychedelics became
all
legal.
Night.
A lot of the psychedelics became illegal.
Transcranial magnetic stimulation.
Life is rubbish. For all of us.
Welcome to the show. The Frontier Psychiatrist. Let's go.
That boy needs therapy.
All that's going on here is that these people do not have a language for talking about their thoughts and their feelings. And as soon as they start talking about their thoughts and their feelings, they don't have to do crazy things.
This is the fifth episode in my pandemic retrospective. And in this podcast, I got ambitious. I think I did this whole episode in about 2 days, but there's a lot more production that went into it because, you know, I was stuck like the rest of us were inside trying to make sense of the world. We have a lot to reckon with, and that's my takeaway from listening back to this all these months and now years later.
As of Saturday, the 28th of March, 2020, there have been 660,173 confirmed cases of COVID-19 worldwide.
I mean, we're in such a wave right now, and we're coming up on such a wave. Like, I have this weird obsession with rogue waves, which are these giant 10 or 20 story waves that kind of appear in the middle of the ocean for a variety of reasons and then vanish. So they've been always very hard to prove.
Of the confirmed COVID cases, 121,489 have been confirmed to be in the United States. 3,229 people have recovered and 2,032 people have died in this country. This, understandably, is freaking people out. And in order to freak out just a little bit less, this is a podcast.
Well, it's remotely possible. The podcast about uncertainty, anxiety, and existential despair.
In some places, like New York City, people are starting to get scared. Hospital emergency rooms are starting to fill. And people aren't leaving their homes, sheltering in place, or
and I think that is what we're looking at, is like the white cliffs of Dover.
It's kind of like a flood. We see it coming. We know that the next 3-4 weeks is going to be worse. And we know that our staff are calling out more and it's becoming a bigger problem. And I think that increases the stress.
And don't worry, I'll introduce the whole cast of characters. But first, let them be a little mystery.
So, you know, it feels like there's a pretty big tidal wave coming. For which, you know, TBD if we are actually prepared for or not.
There is a curve. Everyone's talked about the curve. Everyone's talked about the height and the speed of the curve and flattening the curve. I've said that curve is going to turn into a wave, and the wave is going to crash on the hospital system.
And originally, I was going to have this sound effect. But that's kind of obvious. So how about we skip it? And we could do introductions. Hi, I'm Owen Muir. I'm a psychiatrist, and I work at a practice called Brooklyn Mines.
I'm a bit worried, you know, like, I go back and forth between, like, you know, and, well, maybe things are overblown.
This is Joe. He's the newest team member at Brooklyn Mines, and he's a couples and family therapist.
Well, you know, I trust in, you know, human ingenuity. We'll get a handle.
And you've probably figured out there's something off, because it's really shitty audio. It sounds like I just recorded someone while they're talking to me on the speakerphone, which is exactly what I did, because Joe escaped New York already.
And then, you know, you hear things like, I don't know if you saw the headlines, like some countries are starting to ban exports on food and hoard,
Jesus.
Like hoard wheat. Yeah. So, you know, that won't go well if that starts happening. You know, it triggers some kind of...
And so it's remotely possible bad things will happen. Let's meet the cast of characters for episode number 5.
I'm not sure how I should introduce myself.
Don't worry about it. If you screw it up, we've got all sorts of editing we can do in post-production.
My name is John Samuels, and I'm currently the founder and CEO of a company called Better Health Advisors.
Sonia Patel, I am the chief pharmacist at Capsule, also employee number 2.
I mean, am I describing myself, my profile in the world, or am I...
Okay, so this one is the writer out of the lot, not an entrepreneur.
Yes, hi, Owen. This is David Goldman. I am a longtime New Yorker and a writer and artist and editor. And
David is being humble. He's a fabulous writer for the New York Times, among other publications.
I was the assistant vice president of emergency medicine at North Shore LIJ, Northwell Health. And prior to that, I had a similar role at Mount Sinai Beth Israel, where I ran the emergency department.
Now, this is the emergency room I trained in at my general psychiatry residency training program, which, and I'm not kidding about this, was the Barbara and David Zucker Hofstra Northwell School of Medicine General Psychiatry Residency Program at the Zucker Hillside Hospital. But John ran a really tight ER.
So I have extensive training in emergency preparedness with FEMA and at Center for Domestic Preparedness in Alabama.
Sonia and Capsule, we love them. I'll let her tell you about it.
We deliver medications throughout New York City in all 5 boroughs, and we do hand delivery of prescriptions, so we are not a mail order pharmacy. And
it's a pharmacy, it's a startup, it's where I get all my meds, and it saves me a ton of time at work. And I swear, I'm just a fan.
Well, I've never had to really introduce myself before, so it's a little daunting, but let's see. I'm, you know, a 53-year-old white male, and I have lots more interesting descriptors, but let's leave it at that for now.
And one of the interval changes you'll notice between this and prior shows is some of my interviews using the internet have worse audio quality. That is the internet buckling under the demand.
Yeah, and according to mathematical models, you know, it should, I saw one thing, you know, a computational analyst, whatever that means, but...
All of us are being asked to become experts at science really fast. And most of us didn't go to medical school, study virology, or much of any of this. And I'm nowhere near a computational scientist person.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think going into pharmacy school or even the last 14, 15 years that I've been a pharmacist, I ever imagined that we would ever be up against something like this. I mean, it's...
Dr. Sonia Patel and her team at Capsule have become the heart of New York's ability to stay home. They can bring the drugs to your door so you don't have to go out. that turns out to be really important.
Because people, I'm not sure if people know this, when a doctor prescribes a medicine, the pharmacist has discretion over whether to dispense it.
Correct.
So just because your doctor prescribed it doesn't mean you're getting it.
Exactly, yeah. We have
And I could have gone back and gotten this interview again when the internet was not collapsing under its own weight, but there's something about hearing the strain of our infrastructure. It felt important to preserve, and so I did.
Shared liability in making sure that this patient gets the right medication, so the pharmacists are using their clinical judgment to decide whether or not a patient should be getting medication, whether or not it's appropriately prescribed.
And how did you decide at Capsule how, what you're going to say when people call up and ask for medications like, you know, these arthritis medicines? Or
we'll have a throwback to last time. The president tweeted about some very speculative drugs that have some data, and everyone tried to get them from pharmacists. I even called up and got denied just to make the point in last episode.
How to approach a situation like this and what's ethically okay and what's clinically okay and what's not. And so you have pharmacists getting influxes, and this is not just a Capsule. This has happened at almost every pharmacy in the country.
And as Dr. Patel made clear to me, there aren't just infinite drugs lying around.
You know, influx of prescriptions for these medications that are not FDA approved. For treatment or prevention of COVID, it leaves them in a place where they have to decide whether the medication goes to their patient who's been taking hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine for X number of years for their rheumatic disease and really needs it, or the doctor that just called in a prescription for, say, one of their family members or one of their office staff because they need the medication to potentially have in their office just in case someone needs it. So, you know, it puts them in a really tough place. And it's not really something that pharmacists have ever, you know, you don't really get trained to work through scenarios like that unless there's guidance that comes down from state Board of Pharmacy or the FDA or governor. And in many states, that's really what's happening is that, you know, the boards of pharmacies, governors are instituting like emergency restrictions or guidelines on how
they've gone through the approval process. It's been approved, and they did it. They took it down from many, many months to immediate. So we're going to be able to make that drug available by prescription.
When in the future we teach our children about how medical care works and what science is, we're going to teach them to look for extreme answer choices. I used to be an MCAT teacher, and immediate doesn't sound like an FDA thing.
Many, many months to immediate. So,
well, immediately annoying and problematic for Sonia and her team at Capsule.
Yeah, so we had to take a step back, and from the very beginning of this, obviously when this happens, drug stocks very quickly start to diminish. So, you know, we have what we have on the shelf, and our ability to get it from wholesalers very quickly, it decreases very quickly because you have everyone either ordering it or the federal government getting their hands on it. And so we didn't have very much of the medication, but the medication that we had, we really had to take a step back and decide who are the patients that are most in need of this. And where are we gonna allocate the small supply that we have? And for us, it was taking care of the patients that we knew needed this medication for a particular.
This is only the first of many, many morally challenging positions our healthcare providers are going to be thrust into. Pharmacists will have to choose who gets what medicine. Doctors will have to choose which patients get a hospital bed. Intensivists will have to choose who gets and who doesn't get a ventilator.
Yeah, I mean, I would say just high level, I would say we were getting orders in to that would require the amount of pills out into the thousands. and we probably had maybe a couple hundred pills in stock.
God.
So we were way short of being able to fulfill all of the orders that we were getting. Large number of prescriptions for 14-day supplies with, you know, various dosing, because clinicians have not really collectively decided on what the proper dosing is for COVID. So we were just getting a ton of prescriptions for 14-day supplies. And
one of the things that's true about ethics is it's always in conflict and it's never straightforward. And the choices we're all going to make are going to stay with us for a long time. I asked David Coleman how he'd think about it.
Right, yes. Well, I think that's the thing, is that it's so dangerous and so toxic. It's kind of like we're all going to get it. You know what I mean? It's like you deal with it. Now, I'm reminded of this woman I saw. She was like, she had twins in a pram and a bag, and like a grocery bag, and she was pushing it, and she was just like, and I said, wow, God, I just don't know how you do it. And she said, you just do. And I think that's what happens with something like this, is like, you just do it. It's not pleasant, it's not easy, but you just get through it. I'll probably just go back to being isolated, and I don't want to say I'll go back to being depressed, because I haven't been lately, so, but I'll probably, I don't know. I mean, I think that's the other thing, that you hear 2% of the population is gone, you know, it's like, that's a different world.
A friend of mine who staffs a hospital in Massachusetts, and I'm not going to be specific about the name of the hospital, but it's a large hospital in Boston. And she said, our doctors are just calling out one after another because they're sick and they're unable to get the shifts filled and get the right doctors there. So they're under enormous amount of pressure all throughout the East Coast.
What John is going to describe for us is how things usually work in an emergency room. So we can see that not only is this going to be more work, it's qualitatively different.
Some shifts are, you know, are 7 to 3, 3 to 11. Other folks work 12-hour shifts. It really depends on the location.
So these are nursing shifts, and they're working 12 hours in a row in some cases. Usually there are breaks, and you can catch your breath.
Sort of at change of shift, they talk about, this is the patient we have, these are the most critical people, these are the sickest folks, here's what we should look out for, here's things I was working on, here's a lab test we need to wait for, and so forth.
Emergency medicine is about communication. And that communication is what gets robbed when we have an influx of patients, the volume of which we've probably never seen. And all of them have the same thing. I can't imagine how we're going to tell them apart when we're trying to communicate to each other.
It's kind of like you run in and immediately you start to work, so you don't get adequate information about what's happening. You don't know what's in front of you. You don't have the resources you need. You can't get a computer because so many people are working on computers.
And all of these factors add to the stress of a massive influx in patients and perhaps fear for yourself because you don't even have your own protective equipment.
The normal things that we do that help increase our throughput, our flow, our efficiency, that helps safety for patients, is compromised because there's so much, the volume is one that it's overwhelming.
I was once taught the reason to go to medical school is not to follow protocol. It's to learn when to break it. We have a new playbook for almost everything in our lives. But the playbook we've used in medicine, and particularly in emergency and intensive care, is a really good one. And we're being forced to throw some of that out the window because of decisions made administratively that perhaps didn't take into mind what might be coming, and now, sadly, has.
Sonia's team at Capsule has a bit of a different take on this, especially when it comes to hospital leadership or Capsule leadership and how they're involved in the operation.
I mean, we take it very seriously. You know, I think at a time like this, as a leader of a company, your employees are going to look to you for guidance. They're going to look for you, to you for support and for comfort, and they're going to hang on at your every word. We've always believed that it's important to lead by example. So, you know, I myself am in the pharmacy some nights overnights dispensing medications. The CEO of our company, Eric, is in the pharmacy filling prescriptions. We are right there with them on the front line, getting prescriptions out. You know, it's really a time like this where you have to show that, you know, your employees are valued as much as we are. Like, we are right there with you, and the virus doesn't distinguish between you or I or a pharmacy tech or a courier. And yes, the health and the benefit of these employees hangs on our shoulders, but for us to kind of be there with them on the front lines, I think is important. And it's the place that we want to be.
There have been stories about hospital CEOs who are leaving the cities in which their hospitals are and perhaps going to Florida, and people have been very upset about these stories. Now, practically speaking, I don't want those older men getting sick and taking up an ICU bed and perhaps a ventilator from someone else in the city of New York who can't arrange to take themselves out of harm's way. And also, these are the same individuals who, when captaining the ship previously, may or may not have any role in the lack of preparedness all of our hospitals had. And as our registered nurse from the ER from last episode puts it, the advertisements from these hospitals have not been as clear and accurate as perhaps they could have been.
And they're definitely on, like, one of the most heavily resourced units in the whole system. It's definitely an ICU. They got hazmat suits, they got N95s and hair masks. Some of the people with hazmat suits have like a second layer on. I've never seen a hazmat suit.
So wait,
the only time I ever wore a hazmat suit was doing Ebola training 3 years ago.
A nurse who survived the Ebola crisis in Africa was recently interviewed about the situation where healthcare providers might not have personal protective equipment or PPE. Her response was simple. In a pandemic, there are no emergencies. What she meant by that was, for healthcare providers, there is never a good reason to run in to any given patient's room without protecting themselves, because losing healthcare providers to illness that could have been easily prevented is not in the long-term good of any of us.
Honestly, I
don't even know.
Can't even, yeah. Especially these days, I think we've kind of lost track. We've been so focused on just like getting people their medications that some of the other numbers we've just, you know. Mm-hmm.
Make sure you have enough Plaquenil, not enough people.
Yeah. Do we have enough masks? Do we have enough gloves? Uh-huh. Do we have, you know, enough PPE, hand sanitizer, alcohol? Like, those are the numbers that we've really been focused on counting these days.
So the metrics are keeping your staff safe.
Exactly. Yeah. The most important thing, really the only thing that matters for the business right now, is that.
Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Owen Scott Muir, MD, and this is the Frontier Psychiatrist Podcast, the companion publication to the frontierpsychiatrist.substack.com. Subscribe and rate this as 5 stars because it helps discovery on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you happen to be listening. Have a great one.